pleasure to introduce our first speaker. Met this woman when she first came in. I am incredibly proud of her. So I give you Heather from the Promises Freedom Group.
Hi everyone. My name is Heather, I'm an addict. First I'd like to thank the Unity Retreat Committee for asking me to speak today at this picnic. It is truly an honor. Probably my least favorite thing to do for Narcotics Anonymous, but it is an honor. Because that just goes to show that this program has been working, you know? Okay. So my story, I grew up in a small town, about an hour and a half away from here, very like tight-knit, small country town, everybody knew everybody, and I had a pretty rough childhood, honestly. There was a lot of physical, emotional, pretty much any kind of abuse you could think of during my childhood. I'm the oldest of three kids. I lived with my dad and my stepmom. I had never lived with my birth mother, ever. So it was pretty rough. I grew up, like, just feeling less than, being told that I was less than, you know, because it was an abusive home. And so at a very young age, I'm talking like school, like 5 years old, like I'd already developed this like idea that like I wasn't important, I wasn't lovable. And that's sad because that's a really young age to like already have that strong of emotions, you know. Very quickly, that turned into anger, you know, and resentment. Damn, I was that kid, like, I'd walk around my little town and, like, 8, 9, 10 years old, and everybody was like, oh, look at that little smiley girl, you know? And then, like, when the adults weren't looking, I was, like, stealing something from somebody or trying to hurt somebody else, like, tripping somebody. Like, I wanted to inflict that pain I was feeling, you know, onto other people, you know, to make myself feel better. I also grew up, my parents, my stepmom and my dad, they used a lot, quite frequently. And I have no idea if they were addicts or not, but there was definitely using going on a lot. The weekends, that's what it was. And, you know, it was hard stuff. It wasn't just drinking. Like, I remember my dad turned my whole attic upstairs in our house into, like, an adult zen. Like, they had, like, a pool table up there and, like ginormous, like, theater, like, speakers and stuff. Like, they were up there, like, getting lit all weekend, you know. We were, like, not allowed to leave the living room, you know. And so, honestly, growing up, I just thought that it was normal to use. Like, that's what adults did when you became an adult, you know? So I want to say about 13 years old is when I used my first substance. My babysitter that lived like across the street, I spent like almost all of my days and nights over there, just like became my second family. It was kind of a way for me to escape my, you know, abusive life, you know, and like this family kind of like took me under their wing. Well, the mom had gotten into a serious injury and was like prescribed pain medication. And 13 years old, like the kids in town, we were bored. There was nothing to do. Like there was no like activities for kids. So like we were looking to like get outside of ourselves and get in some trouble. So I was like stealing these pills, and you know, it honestly just escalated from there, slowly but surely. Did that for quite a while. Got to the point where, you know, she was forced to buy a safe in her own home, you know. Didn't trust me being there. I can remember this woman having to take her purse with her. Like, she kept her medication in her purse, and she took that purse with her everywhere in her own home. She went to the bathroom and, like, went with her. Because it had gotten that bad that, like, I wasn't even sneaky about it anymore. I didn't care. Like, I was addicted. You know what I mean? The addiction was taking hold, and didn't matter, you know? I didn't care. So, yeah, like, that's crazy that I made that family that took me in, you know, like, not feel safe in their own home. That's, you know, that's addiction right there. Talk about, like, high school years. I can remember, like, by this point I'm already, like, occasionally using, stealing pills, like, thinking it's normal. I tried to join some sports in high school. I can remember joining softball. I can remember joining volleyball. I loved volleyball. Actually, I was really great at it. Never felt like I fit in, ever. These other girls that were on this, you know, sports team, I looked up to them. Like, they were the popular girls. They were the athletic girls. You know, they were the ones, we come from a small area, so, like, everybody knew their last name or their family's last name. I didn't fit in. I didn't feel like I belonged, you know? Even though I was very good at this sport, excelled, I went to, like, championship, like, games and stuff. Like, they had chose me, like, me and one other girl. That did not, like, that had nothing to do with, like, that insecurity I felt inside, you know, not belonging. So I dropped out of these sports, met a guy, divulged my life into that, because that's where I fit in. Give me some attention, you know? So I started hanging out, like, with the wrong crowd, because unfortunately, like, that's where I felt like I fit in. I felt like I fit in with the outcasts, the troublemakers, you know, the people who had it tough like I did, you know. So I, like a magnet, got drawn, you know, to those people. And I can remember my senior year in high school, hanging out with people who were much older than me. That was a big thing too. I was always hanging out with guys, and I was always hanging out with the people much older than me, like at least 4 or 5 years older. And even though I hadn't escalated yet, I wasn't using those hard drugs. I was, like, hanging out with the people who were. And I got into a car accident. I wasn't driving. I was with these friends, these associates of mine. And driving, you know, on runs to, like, go get, you know, the next one and stuff. And I'm thinking, I'm so cool. I made it. Like, I'm having the time of my life. We wrecked on the turnpike in PA, and I flew up from the back seat of this person's car and went through the windshield. Shattered my collarbone. Was in, like, this ginormous brace for months. That I refused to wear because I was so defiant, and I was like, I don't need it, I'm fine. And that was my first experience with me getting prescribed. Back then, you know, you had a toothache, they were giving you some hardcore painkillers. So the doctor started dishing out pain medication. I was taking it because the doctor gave it to me, you know? It was prescribed. Like, I'm not doing anything wrong. I can remember getting on the bus one morning my senior year, and a good friend of mine looking at me and, like, asking me if I was okay, telling me that I looked horrible and I looked strung out. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm not even doing drugs. I was strung out. Like, I was young. I was, like, 18 years old. Never, like, I was taking heavy-duty painkillers multiple times a day. Like, I was looking strung out. I wasn't going to school. I didn't care about my grades anymore. My senior year, they, because of my attendance, because I didn't really give a fuck about going to school, and I don't know how it is now, back then, like, if you came in past a certain time, you were absent the whole day. Like, they just marked you absent completely. Well, they were like, you are not allowed to come to graduation. We will mail you your diploma, because my grades were, like, okay, but, like, but my attendance wasn't. So, like, that's a big opportunity that I missed out, like, a big event, you know, that everybody should experience growing up. Like, I didn't care, obviously. Again, my life just kind of revolved around hanging out with whoever had what I wanted or needed, whoever could help me get what I needed. After graduating, like, it really got even worse. I remember moving to North Carolina right after I graduated, and I'm like, things are going to be great, I'm going to be, you know, things are going to get better. That absolutely did not happen. I was down there a matter of, like, I want to say 2-3 weeks, and my coworkers from my new job down there, like, they used, and, like, we can spot those people. I don't know about you, but I can spot those people, like, no matter where I go, like, and started using down there hardcore. Experienced new drugs, new births, you know. Just slowly my addiction kept going. Oh, something else I wanted to talk about. I forgot this part. I'm like, back up. Sorry if I'm all over the place. Right after I graduated, so there's like a few months span before I moved out of state to try and get my shit together. The reason that happened was because within like a month of graduating high school, I was hanging out with these kids that, you know, were my friends. And walking around the streets in my little small town, bored out of our mind, let's get into some trouble. Some kids like decided it would be an awesome fun time to rob the local beer distributor, and like where I'm from, like, kids would drink underage and like go out to like these famous little spots, you know, drinking holes and stuff. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. Let me be involved in that. And like the following day, like the police had like came knocking on my door and was like you're in trouble. Like, we know you're a part of this, because everybody told on everybody, you know how that goes. And so I got like charges out of that. I wasn't directly involved. I wasn't there. I was like, oh, I'm not gonna be here while you do that. But I will meet you after, and I will help you drink whatever you steal. So still wrong. Still got in trouble. And yeah, it was my first experience like getting in trouble with the law. And I was like, you know, let me move out of this place, and maybe, you know, I'll get better. And yeah, it didn't happen. So I was down in North Carolina for those few months. I want to say probably 8 or 9 months. Addiction just slowly spiraling. Had to come back home for all this court stuff for this, you know, breaking into a beer distributor. And yeah, that's just now, like, looking back, like, my addiction literally, I'm the problem. I take it with me everywhere I go. Like, it didn't matter where I moved. Like, what I did, like, I'm the problem, and I was with me everywhere, you know? Came back up here, in my 20s now. I had 2 or 3 kids. In my 20s, addiction spiraling out of control, all different baby daddies, of course, because Heather didn't love herself, so she needed to try and get it anywhere she could. Oh God, I look back and I'm like, Jesus, you're a mess. But my daughters lived through my active addiction with me. for most of their childhood. I have a 15-year-old and a 10-year-old. I didn't say at the beginning, but you can do the math. My clean date's July 27th, 2020. Thank God. Thank God and thank Narcotics Anonymous for sure, because I couldn't do it on my own. So, I'm going to kind of skip forward here a little bit because my mind's going blank here. So fast forward through like 10, 12 more years of using and getting spiritually and physically and mentally broken and damaged. I had been arrested several times because I continued to hang out with people and I continued to make bad choices. I continued using no matter what. Couldn't stay clean. I'd be lucky if I could get like, honestly, a couple days at a time. And usually that was only because I was sick and couldn't get, like, it wasn't on my own, you know what I mean, choosing. I had been incarcerated several times. And thank God for that, too, honestly, because I don't know if I'd still be here if, you know, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania hadn't stepped in a few times in my life. Some things that are, like, sticking out to me right now. During my active addiction, it just like breaks my heart and shows me how far I've came, is like I can remember being like that mom that was like rolling into sheets to meet somebody to get the next one, you know? And I couldn't wait till I got home. So out of the car came the kids, into the sheets bathroom we went, and there I was getting high in the sheets bathroom with my kids, you know? Like, literally making them turn around. Like, turn around, give me a minute, I'll be done in a minute. And it's sad. It's funny because I can remember I used to judge the shit out of all these other moms, like, or my friends or whoever, you know, like, oh, your kids, you're not even watching your kid, you know, this or that. Like, I always tried to rationalize that, like, what I was doing was not as bad as someone else. So, like, I was okay, because I wasn't as bad as that person, you know? And that's not the case at all. So, a few times I went to jail. The last time that I had went to jail, I had done my longest stay in jail. And honestly, it wasn't even that long. It was like 6 months, if we're being honest. But for me, it was a long time, because even though I had never been away from my kids that long, like, you know, in that kind of circumstance. So I had spent those 6 months in jail. I was away from my kids for the first time for like all the major holidays. And I can remember sitting in there just feeling so broken and so defeated. Like, I have no idea what to do. Like, is this all there is to life? Like, because I had grown up just thinking that this was the life that the cards were dealt for me this way. Like, I can't do anything about it. This is just how it is. You know? Nothing's going to ever change. You need to accept it. And that took me to a really dark, dark place. You know? Feeling completely alone, separated from everything and anything. Like, I got to a point I didn't trust my own family. Felt like they were against me. The world was against me. Super, super sad, dark place, you know? Feeling not alone and broken and helpless. And I remember getting out of jail that time and getting, I'm sure others have heard of it, I was in like all the classes, you know? Probation, DRC, outpatient, like my day was filled. They were like, you cannot manage your life. We're going to do that for you. So they filled my day completely. I spent probably 8 hours a day doing all these classes and everything else and check-ins with, you know, the county and everything. And then had outpatient also. Anyway, I started going to my first meetings at the time. And I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. That last time that I was in jail, I first was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. H&I came in to that facility, and I was that person signing up for every class because I didn't want to sit in my cell, you know? So I was like the A student, you know, going to all these things. But the woman that had came in shared her story with us, and I immediately connected with her and her story, and like she had kids, like she had talked about the pain she had went through, and that spark started for me. Thank God for that, and that is why H&I is so dear to my heart, and it will always be, because if it wouldn't have been for that, I don't know if I'd have ever heard about Narcotics Anonymous. Because I hadn't up until that point, I had never. So I'm in all these classes. I start going to some meetings. And I had went to treatment one time also. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. So nervous, guys.
You're fine.
So nervous. Like hotter than it is out here. So I'm in all these classes and stuff. I'm staying clean. I go to a couple meetings. Honestly, just because some other people like that were in my groups and outpatient and all that, they were going. So I'm like, oh, I guess, you know, why not? Like, but I wasn't really like in, you know, yet. I was like, I'm trying to do the right thing, but I really don't want to be uncomfortable, and I really don't want to do anything like that's work, you know? And the biggest thing being, I don't want to get uncomfortable, you know? And walking into a room of people laughing and smiling and hanging out, and I'm like, this is not for me. This is weird. Like, it'd been so long since I had experienced any type of happiness or joy or anything. So, like, seeing that from people was, like, odd. It was so odd. So I stayed around for a little while, but wasn't doing anything. You know, the things that you're supposed to do when you come into Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't get a home group. Didn't get a sponsor. Didn't do any step work. And I ended up relapsing. I went to treatment. And while you're in treatment, because it's a local treatment facility to my area, they had taken you to outside meetings. And I went to this outside meeting. And I remember walking into this church that I had just went into a few times. And a gentleman at the bottom of the stairs, like, remembered who I was, my name, and, like, greeted me with a smile and hugged me. And the fact that he remembered my name, to me, that was, like, more love than I had felt in my life ever, I feel like, you know? And so, honestly, I always remember that, and I make sure I share it, and I try to remind myself of that today, that, like, the power of that hug, you know, when someone's at a meeting is so profound, because it was for me. It gave me that push to keep coming back. So I did keep coming back. But honestly, just because it felt good. It felt good to be loved and hugged, and, you know, people were happy to see me. I still was not willing to do anything extra. I am lazy. And I ended up getting, like, I had about 10 months clean, coming to meetings. That was it. And during that 10 months, my dad was diagnosed with liver cancer. And I remember him calling me and telling me, they told me I have 6 months to live. And I always looked at my dad like he was like Superman. I don't know if anybody else did that, but like I always looked at him like he was Superman and nothing could ever touch him or hurt him. So I'm like, yeah, like they're wrong. That doesn't, you know what I mean? They're probably, you know, they probably just have to say that, you know? And for a few months, he was okay. Like, you didn't see any, you know, drastic change. And then all of a sudden, bam, out of nowhere. And I'm talking, his decline happened in a very short amount of time. I want to say like 2 to 3 months. He went from getting real sick to like, until he actually passed away. One thing I'm grateful for is this program. Even though I wasn't working the full program at that time, I was surrounded by the program and the people in the program, and they helped me be present for him while that was happening. I was there on a regular, like on a daily basis to clean up after him, be there for him, talk to him, like, and that was so hard. I had no way of dealing with that myself. None at all. I had no experience living life on life's terms, period. So I'm so grateful for everybody in the rooms for that. And I was there for him. I was present. I went to that funeral. I was there for my family. I was there for, you know, I was there and I was present. And that, you know, in itself is like the biggest accomplishment. And I'm so grateful for Narcotics Anonymous for that. However, about a month after my dad passed away, you know, things started dying down, calming down. People have their own lives, you know. Heather didn't know how to deal with her emotions on her own. She wasn't doing step work. She wasn't with the sponsor. She wasn't doing anything different. And I've never wanted to feel feelings. That's why I started using in the first place. I wanted to numb everything. So I ended up relapsing. I thought, you know, I can do this in secret. No one's going to know. Like, I'm literally going every evening to sit in a room with other addicts. Like, we know. Like, you know what I mean? We've been there. We've done that. You're not fooling anybody. I heard a lot of people in that relapse, though, you know? And I'm just now in my recovery starting to realize that, too. I thought, oh, it was just a real quick thing. I'm only hurting myself. No, it was no different than any other time I was using in my entire life. Like, I hurt the people closest to me. My best friend, who I've been in recovery with the entire time, like, I manipulated and guilted him into pissing in a cup for me. Excuse my language, I'm so sorry. Because I'm like, if you love me, if you're my best friend, you're going to do this for me. I can't go back to jail. Oh, God, so self-centered, you know. I love you, Jeremy. And all that guilt, man, consumed me. Because not only had I hurt the person closest to me, you know what I mean, guilted and manipulated the shit out of him. My daughters, I had just got them back in my life, like, full time, you know? And also the guilt I felt going into a meeting. Like, all these people who had been there and supported me and loved me, I, like, what are they going to think of me, you know? They're never going to look at me the same again, you know? So I sat with that for about 2 or 3 weeks, lied, didn't, like, just went on about my days, you know, didn't admit that I had relapsed. That was a miserable couple of weeks. Miserable. Actually, one of my very first, like, big vacation during that time, and it was with a bunch of other members in the program, and I can remember, I'm like, we can't say anything to them because they're not going to let me go on this beach trip with them. Like, they're going to kick me out of this club. So I went on this trip and, you know, I'm like, just relapsed. I'm like, miserable, you know, and I made that entire trip so miserable. I mean, probably just for myself, maybe my kids, I don't know. But I made it so miserable, you know what I mean? And did not fully enjoy that because I was just, you know, felt like a fraud, you know what I mean? Just living with all this pain and guilt and shame. And I came home, I said, all right, I can't do this. And the pain's great enough, huh? Right. So my sponsor always says. I came home and picked up a Waikiki tag and like in front of a room full of people that I was like so scared to disappoint. And I didn't disappoint any of them. They loved me, I think, even harder after that than I felt in the first place. Maybe not, they were probably just all still the same, you know, but for me, I was like, they did not look at me any different. They loved me even more. Like, they were just so accepting and loving. And like, that was the first time in my life that I didn't feel like the bad egg, you know? Like, just because I make a mistake, people aren't gonna, you know, hold that against me and hate me. And most of my life, most of my friends, like, you were getting cut off real quick if you did something, you know what I mean, to disappoint somebody. So after that, I made all the changes. I had had enough. That relapse, I got no enjoyment just saying that too. That last relapse for me, I was trying to escape like some emotions and stuff. I had no enjoyment out of it. Immediately felt guilt and shame. And I don't know, thank God for my higher power in this program, because that was it, I think, for me. Like, that was my bottom. I realized I could not do it and do it successfully without making a mess of my life or going to jail. And I didn't want to anymore at that point. That's where it switched from like I can't to I don't want to anymore. And this isn't fun. This isn't what I want. So I got a sponsor. Called that sponsor. Got vulnerable with that sponsor. And that was probably the hardest thing that I needed to do in the beginning of my recovery. Because for me, I already had mommy issues, you know? So like being close to females was not a thing for me, ever. I always felt like I couldn't trust them. I always felt like they were gonna turn their back on me. They were gonna be two-faced. Like, trusting women was very, very hard. Very hard. I will be completely honest, there was a time in the early recovery I was very sick. I thought my sponsor was against me. I'm like blaming stuff on her. Like, she's an angel. She had nothing to do with nothing, you know? But like my disease, like if I started to get close to somebody, my disease wanted to come in there and like cut that shit off. Don't you get close. Don't you build connections. Don't you trust anybody, you know? But I did. I pushed through it anyway. I started doing step work with that sponsor. I think we waited till I probably had like 60 days clean and we started step work. Might have been before that, I don't know. But that's what really changed my life, was when I finally bought and picked up the step working guide and like contacted my sponsor regularly and started working this program fully, like all that it entails, and not just going to meetings. Is hard. Like, I'm not gonna stand up here and say that it's easy. It's not been easy for me. You know, a lot of people see me come into meetings and I'm smiling all the time and I'm like a happy person, you know, and like that's not me at home all the time. You know what I mean? Like, I've been around for a little while and I'm putting some work and stuff and my life is beautiful today, but we did not get cured, that is for sure. Like, my crazy thoughts, oh my God. I hear other people share about it too, and I'm like, me too. I will still, like, go home and obsess about something crazy. I could, it's not as bad anymore, but like, I'm out to eat last night with like my fiance and all our friends, you know, and he says one thing, and I'm like, what'd you say? Because I'm going to be sitting on that and obsessing on that for like the next 15 hours. And I'm going to make all kinds of scenarios in my head. And I'm going to end up being really pissed at you for no reason at all. Nothing even happened. And I do that regularly, all the time. You know what I mean? Like, I sometimes have trouble like staying in reality, you know? And that's why it's so important that I stay connected. Because my sponsor, my we, like, meetings, like, that helps keep me centered in reality, because my craziness will just kick in and take off to the races, you know, really quick. So yeah, we started step work, and that's beautiful. That's honestly where it's been at for me. That's where, I mean, it's hard work. Like, it's not easy. And it's shown me that if I really want it, I'm gonna do it. Like, it's not gonna be handed to me. I have to want it that bad, you know? And it's tough sometimes. Like, step work's where I've like taken a look at myself, and that shit's scary. Because as I previously stated, I've never been fond of myself, you know? So it's like, last thing I wanted to do was start looking in the mirror and changing me, you know? But I've been able to do that. And I've learned to have some acceptance, like all these spiritual principles. I'm not going to like go through all the steps and stuff because it's like getting low on time here. But like all the spiritual principles that I've learned, like through writing on step work and going over step work with my sponsor, is like where the magic has happened for me. And I've been able to use that stuff in my everyday life. But that's also my key, is I have to remember to use that on a daily basis in everything I'm doing. Because if not, I can write whatever in that book, and it's going to collect dust on my shelf, you know? And I'm probably not even going to remember what I wrote, honestly. But if I'm not, like, using that shit outside of, you know, the step working guide, like, then I'm not going to actually change and, like, do anything different, you know? This program has allowed me to completely change my life. And I was like reflecting on that today, having to speak, you know what I mean? I always want to make sure like that I'm giving Narcotics Anonymous the credit that it deserves, because I couldn't do it on my own. I tried for so long and I was so broken and empty, and I needed help, and like you guys helped me and this program helped me. Like, I'm no longer that selfish mom that's, like, putting my needs before my daughter's. Like, now I'm at every soccer game and every school function, no matter what, because it comes first, before what I want to do. The same goes with my recovery. My recovery has to come first, before everything. And honestly, if I don't use today, that's a win, no matter what else I did during the day. Even if I messed up and screamed at my kids before I came here. You know? I didn't, but that happens a lot. Like, I go home and anger is a very big defect of mine, I found out. And I'm still working on that. That's been a long process. I'll probably be working on these defects forever, huh? They don't go away. Damn it. But yeah, like, I don't use those things. I don't beat myself up anymore and use it as a reason to lose everything and get high again. Like, because no matter what, getting high, somebody said to me earlier, getting high isn't fixing nothing for me. If anything, it's going to make it worse. So just go to sleep, let my head hit the pillow, it'll be okay, I can try again tomorrow. Yeah, this program has just done amazing things for me. I'm able to be a productive member of society, and that's so freaking weird. Really? Because I honestly, like, when I was using, I couldn't keep a job for 2 months at a time. Literally. That was a long job if I stayed for 2 months, like, you know? And now, like, I've been employed where I'm at for, like, almost 2 years. And, you know, I've been able to grow in this program to the point where I'm like, you know, I can recognize when it's time for me to, like, level up in my life, in my program, in my recovery. And I'm grateful for that, because I've always settled. I've always had very low self-esteem. I don't think I'm worth anything. I'm only, you know what I mean, I'm not worthy of more. And that is such a lie that my disease has been telling me for too long. Like, I'm not just worthy of right now. Like, I can do whatever I want as long as I stay clean and keep doing the next right thing and keep practicing what I'm learning in these rooms. Like, I'm worthy of whatever I want, whatever I can dream of, you know? And honestly, because I've been stuck for a little while, I've sat on my step work, you know, for quite a while. like 8-9 months maybe. And I'm like, oh, I'm okay. No rush, you know. And meanwhile, I'm getting miserable. I hate my job that I'm at right now. Hate it. And I'm just kind of telling on myself because if I say it out loud, then maybe I'll do something, you know. But a lot of being stuck there in a place that I don't like is because I'm like, I'm not worth more than this. This is all I'm going to amount to. I'm not good enough to achieve more than this, you know what I mean? And that's a lie. That's a lie that my disease tells me. I can recover. I don't know if I won't even say anything about that. Anyway, I've been doing a lot of work on myself the past year, outside, inside and outside of Narcotics Anonymous. Just all around, practicing these things in my entire life. And becoming a completely different person. And honestly, I want to thank you guys all for being here. I really needed this like wake up call in my recovery, I think, today, just to like remind myself how far I've came. Because like there's a point in time where I wouldn't shower for like 2 weeks at a time. I wouldn't leave my bedroom for days at a time. I was like not even a human being. I was literally like an animal. And like recovery has allowed me to obtain so much in my life. I just recently got engaged.
That's right.
And that's beautiful because this is the first time in my life that like I've allowed myself to not only be vulnerable, because I learned that from this program, but like be vulnerable enough to create that close of a connection and relationship with somebody. And the same goes with all of my close friendships that I've gotten and my relationship with my sponsor. Like, I put that into my wedding because that's how much I trust her and love her, and she is my support. Like, you're doing everything with me, right by my side, you know? Because like life really is beautiful. It's work, and it's like never ending. Like, I have good days and bad days, but like I'm never alone anymore. Like, I got people here for me to like hype me up and be there for me, and I've never had that anywhere else in my life, except for in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. So I'm gonna keep coming back and keep growing and getting better. And that's all I got.